Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
All right, 9:08 as we make our way through Thursday morning, January 16th. I know official quit your resolution day was the second Friday of January, I think. But a lot of people decide that they want to lose weight in the new year. And I said a long time ago that when it comes to losing weight, I don't want a Hollywood star telling me how to do it. I don't want some no-neck muscular guy telling me how to do it. I want somebody in a lab coat behind a microscope that knows how the body works telling me how to do it. And that proved to be right. I'm telling you, Catherine Hudson, our friend, joins us now, Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, a gastroenterologist who's board certified in obesity medicine. She sees patients in the weight loss and bariatric surgery clinic at UMC. Good morning, Doc. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me, Tommy.
I want to start by opening the line here at 504-260-1870, the Oquinard Jeweler Talk and Text line. Text your questions in about weight loss. There are no questions that are dumb. There are no questions that can be re-asked because people listen at different times. And we're going to try to help you lose some weight this year if that is, in fact, what you want to do. First of all, when it comes, Dr. Hudson, to deciding whether or not you need to lose weight or should lose weight, I always try to tell people to approach it from a health standpoint, not a look standpoint or appearance standpoint, because let's face it, losing weight's not going to make you prettier or handsomer, is it, or more handsome?
No, I think that's exactly right. When patients come to my clinic, they ask me how much they should weigh or what their BMI should be. And my answer to that is, how should I know? I care about your health. And if having a little extra to pinch isn't really affecting your health, you don't have diabetes, you don't have obstructive sleep apnea, then it's really up to you. It's when that extra weight on your body is causing other health conditions that we really need to address it. It's not about aesthetics. It's just about health.
And I think sometimes, and knowing what I went through in my own personal struggles before in my life, sometimes you want to get that perfect body with no pinch or anything like that. But then you let good get in the way of perfect. So I would think, well, you know what? If I can't be like the heck with it, I mean, whatever I want. And I ballooned up to 230 pounds, and there's a big difference between 158, which I am now, with a little bit of pinch around the stomach, as opposed to 230, health-wise, is what I'm talking about.
Yes. I mean, when I say that there could be no consequence to having a little extra weight, we know that there is an increased risk of, there are about 13 obesity-associated cancers. So obesity is increasing the risk of developing those cancers. So there's not no consequence to having extra weight on your body, but if the idea is that you have to be a certain number on the scale, that can be a problem for people. We get that all or nothing attitude that you're talking about, that black and white thinking. That's why I like to really focus on non-scale goals with patients. So instead of thinking about just getting the number down on the scale, start thinking about things that you can set as goals, such as, did you go for a walk at least 4 times this week? Did you get 8 hours of sleep at least 3 or 4 times this week? How many servings of fruits and vegetables did you eat every day? So those are the non-scale goals that we should be setting, because it's not just about the number on the scale.
Let's talk about the first steps that people should take. And I guess, again, going from my experience, people, generally speaking, they don't put on a lot of weight overnight, so they can't expect to take it off overnight, right?
That's right. Sometimes people will start a new medication that can lead to some increased weight gain. But usually it's something that happens over time. I think a lot of people don't realize that as we age, we actually need less calories. So the amount of calories that I could consume when I was 18 in high school or, you know, right out of high school and college is drastically different than the number of calories I need now in my 40s. And so we think, well, I'm not doing anything different. What's the problem here? But we actually need less calories. So as we get a little bit older, we need to adjust for that decrease in energy need.
When it comes to people that don't know whether they should exercise or diet, first of all, the word diet probably is a bad one to use because it's not a temporary thing, right? You have to change your habits forever if you're going to change your weight forever. Is that an accurate statement or not?
Yes, that's right. The word diet can be problematic because it can mean different things in different settings. But the idea that you're going to engage in some behavior change for a limited amount of time, get to the weight that you want to get to, and then go back to the way that you were living before is the wrong thinking. What we're really pushing in our clinic is lifestyle change. And that can start with behavior change in the kitchen. It can start with some exercise. It really depends on what you feel comfortable doing. I often see people spending all of their mental energy on trying to get to the gym and do a really rigorous workout. If you enjoy doing that and you have the time for it, that's great. Like, go ahead and do that. But the mental energy, if you only have a certain amount in the day, you should really focus that mental energy on food prepping and making sure that you have the kinds of foods at home that are going to help you meet your calorie deficit. So spend your energy in the kitchen first, and then use exercise as a way to boost your energy and boost your mood and keep you accountable to the calorie deficit you're making in the kitchen.
When it comes to people of different sizes, whether it's fair or not, somebody that's 6'3" can eat more than somebody that's 5'2"?
Yes, that calorie deficit I'm talking about and that how you decrease your calorie needs over time, that number, the number of calories you need in a day is based on your height, your weight, your age, and your gender. So if you're a much taller person, then you likely need more calories to maintain that muscle and bone and even the fat that's on your body.
The operative word there being need, because the people that are both 6'3 and 5'1 may feel or at least want the same thing, right?
Yes. I think that, you know, we all really enjoy, especially here in Louisiana, the food in our culture. Food tastes amazing. The food industry has made sure that food tastes amazing and that you want to eat as much of it as you can. But the amount of energy that we need every day is much less than what we usually take in. And that's the problem with the obesity epidemic, is that we eat very high-calorie processed food on a regular basis. We really have to make an intentional decision to switch back to the way we ate in the past, which is foods that look like they did when they grew out of the ground, so the fruits and the vegetables and lean meat.
Somebody texted in and said, eat less, move around more. And that is exactly what got me to 240 pounds or however much I was at the top of my weight, because it's not that simple and it has to do with what you eat and the way your body metabolizes it. Am I wrong, doctor?
No, I think you're right, Tommy. I think the idea of eat less and move more is just overly simplified. I actually am trying to encourage patients in my clinic to eat more. And what I'm asking them to eat more of is fruits and vegetables. If you add in more fruits and vegetables, you'll be less hungry throughout the day. because those fruits and vegetables are stimulating the release of gut hormones that are the same gut hormones that we're using to make GLP-1 medication like Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound, and Mounjaro. And so those fruits and vegetables are keeping you from feeling as hungry. You can make a calorie deficit by eating processed foods, high-calorie processed foods. It's just that you don't get to eat very much of them. So it's better to actually eat more fruits and vegetables, and then you won't be as hungry when you're eating those higher-calorie, ultra-processed foods.
Somebody texted in to ask you about the difference between fruit and fruit juice and the way your body processes it.
Oh, that's a great question. And this is a common myth that I hear a lot in my clinic. So the reason why fruit juice is essentially the same as like having a soda with a vitamin dropped in it is because when you eat fruit, there's sugar in fruit and in vegetables, but that sugar is bound to fiber. And your body has to digest it. It has to pass through a lot of your, it has to go through your stomach and go through all your small intestine for the fiber to be pulled away from the sugar so that the sugar can be absorbed. When you take a piece of fruit or a vegetable and you put it in a blender or in a juicer, you're actually doing some of the work of digestion by pulling the sugar away from the fiber. And now as soon as you drink it and it starts, it goes through your stomach and into your small bowel, that sugar is absorbed immediately in your GI tract. It overwhelms your liver, you know, your blood sugar spikes, and you don't get that release of gut hormones that I was talking about before. If you ate that fruit as a whole piece of fruit, then your body would do the work of digestion. It would take a long time to pull that sugar away from the fiber. You'd get that release of gut hormones that make you feel less hungry later in the day. So there's a drastic difference between drinking fruit juice and having a piece of fruit.
When it comes to the way people's brains are wired, you know, there's the old thing when you go on a date and say, do you like sweet or salty? Which one are you? And people say either sweet or salty, sometimes neither, sometimes both. But are people wired differently in terms of their metabolism or how much they can eat or how much they want to eat?
Yes, absolutely. So I think it's hard for people to understand or to appreciate how much of a genetic disease this is. Just like you're saying, people have preferences for certain types of foods. The more genes that you have that are set with preferences to for a propensity to gain weight. So I don't like to move around a lot. I don't like to exercise, or I get tired really easily, or I love dessert, right? I love to eat a lot of dessert. If you have those preferences for behaviors that lead to increasing the number of calories you're taking in, then that can lead to obesity. There are some people who, you know, you sit across from them at a dinner and they only eat half the food on their plate. They don't think much about it. They pass on dessert. They're just not into it. So there's a genetic component behind why we have these certain preferences for foods and movement. And so the more genes you have that lead to obesity, usually the higher your BMI will be.
Little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, but I'm going to guess, doctor, and tell me if I'm making stuff up in my head, because I do that.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
That sometimes, but that could be part of because of the development of mankind and how, were it not for processed foods, were it not for people being able to sit around and work, and if we were still back in the days where the only people that lived were the ones who lived the most efficiently in terms of what they had to hunt and gather to eat to survive, that would be who would be alive today, right, as far as the genetics go, or am I making stuff up?
No, that's right. So our bodies are designed to survive the famine that now never comes. Mm-hmm. You know, thousands of years ago, if you ate extra bites at the end of your meal, you know, if you were extra hungry, if you preferred, you know, very sweet foods, some of those things would have helped you put on a little bit extra weight that you would have survived the famine when it actually came. The problem is our genetics really haven't changed over thousands of years. We are exactly the same. Our brain is wired to survive a famine that just nowadays isn't coming. And so we're so good at surviving the famine that it's caused this obesity epidemic.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Always an interesting hour with Dr. Catherine Hudson. She sees patients in the weight loss clinic and bariatric surgery clinic at UMC. She's an associate professor of clinical medicine at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. She's a gastroenterologist who's board certified in obesity medicine. And the only comparison I can make is that just like when your car has a problem, you need to have somebody that knows the way the computer works, the way the engine works, the way the fuel is consumed, what makes the wheels turn, et cetera. That's what she is with the human body. And it's not as simple as you think. And we'll talk some more when we come back. Yeah, any questions, comments, Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and text lines open, 504-260-1870. I'll recommend, as I always do, this documentary Fed Up, F-E-D-U-P, that you can find on Prime and other locations, because it really did change my outlook on how I eat, and it goes the difference between fruit and fruit juice, et cetera. That's my endorsement, not the doctor's. 923 now, back in a flash, WWL. 9:29 on this Thursday morning, we're talking to our friend Dr. Catherine Hudson, associate professor of clinical medicine at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, gastroenterologist who's board certified in obesity medicine. She sees patients in a weight loss and bariatric surgery clinic at UMC. I think a lot of people know I've lost almost 100 pounds, kept it off for a couple of years now with the use of Mounjaro. So somebody texted and said, do you need less calories as you age because you move less and have less muscles? If so, if you remain active, do you still need fewer calories?
That's a good question. So the idea is that as we age, as you know, as women, we have less of certain hormones. As men age, they have less of certain hormones that contribute to sort of the maintenance of our muscle mass. And so if you're maintaining your muscle mass by doing strength training exercises as you age, you're going to maintain your muscle mass and your bone density. And that means that you will need additional calories to support that. And so, yes, you can sort of boost your calorie needs by maintaining your muscle mass as you age.
So when it comes to muscle mass and burning calories and aerobic or anaerobic exercise, I don't mean to confuse people here. Just take us through maybe the differences between what type of exercise people need at different points in their lives and the importance of resistance training as well as cardio.
Yeah, so there's a few different types of exercise. When I talk to patients about exercise, I like to emphasize a couple things. One is cardio, or getting your heart rate up, you get out of breath, you're sweaty. You know, people like to think of cardio as a way to lose weight. But the number of calories that you burn when you're doing cardio is usually not that much. It's, you know, for me, it's about 100 calories per mile that I might run. And so if I want to burn 500 calories because I want to have, you know, a big piece of like decadent chocolate cake, that's 5 miles I have to do just to account for that piece of cake. So we try not to think of cardio as a way to earn calories that you can eat later because it doesn't really work out that well. You can sort of negate all of that work that you did by just overindulging in something that's high calorie. cardio is really beneficial for your heart health. You want your heart to be strong. If you get really sick, let's say you get the flu, your body has a lot of work to do, and that's sort of a stress test on your heart. So doing cardio actually maintains your cardiovascular health so that your body is up for whatever may come along. Now, when it comes to weight training or resistance training, that's about building muscle. And like I mentioned before, building big muscle actually helps maintain your bone density. You know, we've been told for a long time that you should drink extra milk because that's how you have strong bones. Really, the most important thing for you to do is weight training exercise that builds muscle. That muscle pulls on that bone and helps strengthen that bone. And sometimes putting on extra muscle, we think of it as like bulking up, and that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to lose weight. But building muscle will increase the number of calories you need and help with creating that calorie deficit. So I like to think of exercise as weight training. You want to build muscle and build bone density. You want to do cardio to help with your cardiovascular health. And then you also just want to do stretching and movement and be active, walking, whatever it may be, for the mental health aspect of it. I know for me personally, if I'm trying to do something with calorie deficit in the kitchen, I'm more likely to stick to that plan if I've done a workout that day. It's sort of accountability. It's mindfulness. It boosts my mood. It makes me feel good. There's endorphins that are released when we exercise. So you have to not forget about the benefit, the mental benefit of doing any type of movement or exercise.
So I'm getting texts about this diet or that diet, and I would like, Doctor, if we can, to revisit the word diet because, and look, I put on 40 pounds, lost it, put it on, lost it, put it on, lost it, spent my whole life doing that until I realized the way the body works and that my mindset had to be, we're not going back. We can't go back. This is not a temporary thing. If you want, you got to make a choice. Right. If you want to eat like you're eating now, you're going to be obese. And I'm using the medical term there because I was, and I was pre-diabetic. If you don't want to be pre-diabetic, and I want to talk about diabetes in a minute if we can, well, then you're going to have to change your lifestyle. You're going to have to change the way you live, just like if you I can't even think of an example right now. If you don't want to be cold, you got to start wearing a coat. It's that, or if you don't want to live in a cold climate, you're going to have to move somewhere else. And it's almost that drastic, is it not? Or that much of a commitment?
Yeah, I think when people talk about certain types of diets, so if people ask me about keto diet or interval fasting, you can think of the word diet to mean this temporary thing that you do to change behavior, to lose weight, and then you go back to the way you were before. Or you can think of diet as the food that you tend to eat. Even if you're not trying to lose weight, you have a diet that you follow, or certain foods you eat and certain foods you don't. So some people may be using the term that way. And when people ask me which diet should I follow, or what they mean is what type of food should I eat or not eat, I like to empower people to choose to eat the way that they want to eat. If we're talking about losing weight and making a calorie deficit, you can do that with almost any combination of food. Now, when you're making a calorie deficit, you do need to eat enough protein. That doesn't necessarily have to be animal protein, but you do need protein to maintain your muscle mass when you're in a calorie deficit. Now, some people will say, well, what about keto? That's fine. If you want to eat a keto diet, there are some concerns about whether or not that's cardiovascularly healthy to eat that much fat or animal protein. But it's not magical in that being in ketosis causes you to burn fat faster or more than what your body needs. Your body's never going to burn more energy than it needs. Otherwise, it would overheat and you would die. So keto doesn't help you lose weight faster. But if that style of eating is what makes sense to you, it's easy for your life, and you can make a calorie deficit when doing it, then by all means, do the keto diet if that's what you want to do. If you're the type of person who can skip breakfast and skip lunch and just have a sensible dinner that helps you make that calorie deficit, then do interval fasting if that's what you like. There are some people who can't fast because they feel bad when they've skipped a meal or when they're hungry. So I usually tell people to choose the style of eating that feels best for them. Now, we know that eating enough fruits and vegetables throughout the day actually improves health, regardless of if you lose weight or not. So I do encourage people to eat at least 800 grams of fruits and vegetables a day. And that's to help with not only improving health, but also to help you feel less hungry throughout the day.
Somebody texted it in, and Lord knows I was living this life. And this brings us to, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back about sweets, just being addicted to sweets. And I could, you know, I tell you this before, I would order birthday cakes under assumed names. I would order a birthday cake and they'd say, who's it for? And I'd get caught flat footed. People now have flat feet now, too. And I'd say, well, Fred, happy birthday, Fred. That'll work. Sure. Make it happy birthday, Fred. Because I like birthday cake. And I realized and made the choice, I can't do that. I can't eat that kind of stuff. And I just can't. So when we come back, we'll talk about pre-diabetes. And once you get the type of diabetes that is not genetic, you have it for the rest of your life. I think that's why it's so important from a medical standpoint, not an appearance standpoint, from a medical standpoint to maintain a healthy weight. We're talking to Dr. Catherine Hudson, some valuable information. You do not want to get diabetes. It's type 2 doctors, the one I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You do not want type 2 diabetes because once you have it, you have it. Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, gastroenterologist, board certified in obesity medicine. She sees patients at the Weight Loss and Bariatric Surgery Clinic at UMC. If we change a couple of lives a day, we will have done some good work. 938-22 till 10, traffic now, WWL. All right, 9:43, 17 till 10. Quickly back to Dr. Catherine Hudson, who sees patients at the Weight Loss and Bariatric Surgery Clinic at UMC. She's a gastroenterologist who's board certified in obesity medicine. So let me throw a couple of things together here, doctor, in the time that we have left. I'm getting some texts from people that's saying in certain cases, type 2 diabetes is reversible. I guess I should know by now to avoid words like never or ever or always, but type 2 diabetes is extremely hard to reverse. I know they call it remission. They prefer to refer to it as that. Take me through type 2 diabetes, what leads to it, pre-diabetic conditions, and weight loss, if you would, please.
Okay. Yeah, so from what you mentioned before the commercial, you know, I love cake too. And actually, it's my best friend's birthday. Happy birthday, patients. And we were just talking about she's getting the JFK birthday cake. And so, you know, when I talk with patients about their favorite foods or their favorite dessert or whatever it may be, you should never stop eating your favorite foods. It's really about just adopting more moderation. So when people are asking me about sugary foods, and this always comes up, cake is obvious, but fruit is less obvious. Sometimes people with type 2 diabetes have been told by physicians, by dietitians, that they shouldn't be consuming a lot of fruit. When you have something like type 1 diabetes, where those patients are really dependent on insulin to live, they get really good at calculating how much sugar they can take in for how much insulin they need. In type 2 diabetes, it's a little bit different, but eating fruit does not worsen your diabetes. Eating fruit actually makes your diabetes better. And in my clinic, like I mentioned before, we don't shoot for a number on the scale. What I want is to see your diabetes type 2 to go into remission. And you're right. We don't ever say it goes away, but you can sort of reverse the severity of it. You can make it go in the other direction. But for the purposes of diagnosis, we say that you're in remission. And
let me jump in for a second, doctor.
If I can jump in for
1 second. To go into remission, and I'm just trying to make a point here, you have to change your lifestyle forever, which is the same thing you have to do to lose weight to avoid diabetes in the first place. So why not do it before you get diabetes? Is that an accurate statement?
I mean, yes, it is an accurate statement. There's actually happening right now, CMS, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, are considering a proposed rule change to say it's time that we start treating the disease of obesity instead of letting patients get to the point where they develop the comorbidities of obesity, such as diabetes, before we'll pay for the medication or the bariatric surgery or whatever it is. And, you know, if you're interested in going and advocating for that for yourself or your loved ones, you can go to the Obesity Action Coalition, and they have a place on their website where you can say, I agree with this. We should treat obesity before it becomes the comorbidities. But that is right. The things that I talk about with patients in clinic is not just about losing weight, right? I'm trying to help them put their diabetes into remission. I'm trying to help them get off their blood pressure medicines or stop needing their CPAP machine for their obstructive sleep apnea. If we can treat obesity early, then we don't get to those comorbidities.
I don't understand why the insurance companies are hesitant to pay for it, because it's so much cheaper for them to pay for the medicine beforehand, is it not, than to deal with the comorbidities, it would seem like? Unless they run the numbers. Pardon me?
Well, the medications are very expensive, and the pharmacy benefits managers make it even more expensive for the insurance companies to get those medications to treat patients. But the reason why they don't want to spend the money is because the complications of obesity take time. And I think the average patient stays on a certain insurance for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So what they want is to not pay while you're on their insurance for 3 years, and then you're someone else's problem. So there's a lot of confusion. Go ahead.
The ugly side of it, the business side of it, is the actuarial table, and they figure so many people are going to die, and so right. They won't have to. It's ugly, but it's the truth. Let's talk about weight loss. First of all, I can't believe, of all people, to tell me about a new cake that I'd not heard of, it would be you, you, Dr. Catherine Hudson, to alert me to a new cake I'd not heard of, the JFK Presidential White Tort, which is raspberry. And shame on you, Dr. Hudson, for exposing me to a new cake that I'd not heard of.
There should be no shame.
No, I'm just teasing you. I'm just
playing. We need to be able to enjoy these things.
Exactly, but just don't order one for no reason and eat the entire cake and build a weekend around it.
That's right.
No, but I looked it up. I didn't know what a JFK was. Let's talk about these weight loss medicines. Who are they not for?
I think these medicines are, you know, they were developed, and this is a huge misconception. These medications were developed, the development started back in like the 1940s and 50s when they were looking for how to change body size. They were doing this in rodents and rats and mice. And they developed all these, they discovered proteins, which some were, you know, they developed leptin, and they discovered GIP and GLP-1 and all these things that we now know as gut hormones that do impact your weight. And so that's how they were originally discovered. When they became FDA approved, it was first for use in diabetes. And so we know them as medications for diabetes. However, they're very effective for the treatment of obesity, which is what they were originally developed for. And we now have indications for cardiovascular disease. So if you've had a stroke or heart attack or peripheral artery disease, you can have these medications prescribed to you for those indications, because they improve your risk of having another heart attack, even without you losing weight on the drug. So they do things more than just make you not hungry. We also have a new indication for one of the drugs for obstructive sleep apnea, because we know that when patients take these, they lose some weight and they don't need their CPAP anymore. We're going to soon see indications, I think, for chronic kidney disease, fatty liver. We may even see them for dementia and addiction. So these drugs are what we call pleiotropic, which means they do a lot of things to a lot of different organ systems. They're really for a lot of different people.
Final thought. Somebody keeps texting in about how do you add fruits and vegetables when you don't like vegetables. Somebody told me, a doctor, I think it was, your taste buds regenerate after 3 weeks or something along those lines. I'm now, doctor, I kid around with my kid calling it a pot of slop, where I cook brown rice with a lot of vegetables and then put a protein in it, and I eat out of that all week, and I'm just used to eating that now. It's like, I hate to say dog food, but that's my feed. That's what I eat, right? So you can train yourself, right?
Yeah, I think it's about opening your mind and truly being motivated to incorporate more veggies and fruits into your diet. I will say that when I started doing the 800-gram challenge, which you can look up online and start following that, I really wanted to like more veggies, and I hated celery. And I found ways to start eating celery. I eat it with chicken salad. I make my own chicken salad, and I eat it with scoops of celery. And I crave celery now, which I never even imagined. But for the person who's asking about how to incorporate veggies if you don't like them, the easiest way that I tell my patients is, let's say every week you get Chinese food and you love this certain dish, this Chinese food. Just order a side of steamed veggies and mix it into that dish that has that sauce that you love. And then, so now you're eating something that you love, a sauce that you love on something that maybe you don't like as much. And eventually over time, you may become accustomed to the type of crunch that the carrots have or the texture of the broccoli. And you may start to like it because you've paired it with something that you already know that you love. So that's probably the easiest way to start incorporating vegetables into your diet.
And are these drugs better than bariatric surgery, different? It depends on who the patient is. One's better than the other, or can one prevent the other? I don't know. Tell me about that, Doc.
I think the best way to answer that question is it depends on what you need as a patient. So bariatric surgery right now is more effective at weight loss than the medications. In the future, newer medications may be better at weight loss than bariatric surgery, but we absolutely need both because bariatric surgery is not right for everyone. There are risks to bariatric surgery, and you know, some people may not want to take those risks. There are risks to taking medications, even though they're less severe sometimes than bariatric surgery, but some people don't want to take a medication for the rest of their life. So it's really about what's right for you as a patient, and you have to talk with your providers and get all of the information before you make decisions. And I truly believe that these medications and these surgeries need to be used in sequence and in combination to get really good weight loss for some patients who need both.
Thank you, Dr. Catherine Hudson. I appreciate your time. It can be done. It's not easy, but it can be done, and that's what's the most important part. We'll take a break, come back, see what Newell's got for us today on WWL.